Hi, I'm Emma Martins, and you're listening to The Longest Battle here on RNIB Connect Radio. The reason I decided to do The Longest Battle is because I caught a virus in 2013 when I was in Vietnam. It changed my life forever, and as a result, I've had to learn pretty much everything again, from crossing a road to making a cup of tea. So I decided I would talk to other people who have been through life-changing situations. My guest today is Josie Horton, who in 1992 got through to the judo semi-finals at the Barcelona Olympic Games. In May 2016, Josie had to have part of her lower leg amputated after she was involved in an accident near her home in North London, where a bus ran over her leg. After the accident, Josie spent time in recovery and through rehabilitation had to get used to using a wheelchair and an artificial leg to get around. Josie, or Judo Josie as she is also known, to the pupils at her school where she teaches judo, were so determined to get back to school, and within 6 months after her accident was back teaching her pupils judo again. When I met Josie, I began by asking her what life was like before the accident and how much she could actually remember from that night when she was actually run over by a bus.
I was incredibly active. I've done judo since I was 8 years old and I continued until I retired and then I set up my own business. So before the accident, I was working, teaching, swimming, gym, walking, going out, very socially and physically active.
Wow, that's amazing. That's pretty good. So you're a proper athlete.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't say proper at weekends. I give my break weekends is when I let go a bit.
Yeah. So what's been the highlight of your career?
The highlight of my career has been representing my country at the Barcelona Olympic Games in judo in 1992.
Wow.
And on top of that, for many years, having the opportunity and privilege to do judo and be part of a team that was the best team in the world at the time. They were amazing, and to learn from the others was, you know, just a really good opportunity and helped my judo tremendously. So I was very lucky.
And is judo something that you've always grown up doing it
always,
all your life?
Always.
Yeah. As a child, were you?
Yep. 8 years old, I started. Yeah. And then I just continued.
What actually happened on that night? What was the life
It was just a normal Friday night. Mm. Met up with really good friends. Went out for dinner. Had a couple of drinks. And then on the way home, catching the bus home, just involved in a collision, which resulted in my lower left leg having to be amputated.
Tell me what actually happened. Was it massive blood loss or how?
I was very lucky because my good friend, as soon as the accident happened, he tied his scarf around my leg, which saved my life. And then the paramedics came and put a tourniquet on it, which also saved my life. But what they didn't realise was the blood loss, because I was sitting on a drain. So I was just losing blood. And then when they transferred me into the ambulance, I went into shock. And then when I arrived in hospital, because my templates were so low, the blood wouldn't clot and I was getting weaker. So I was up, I was sort of talking to them in a brace. I could see my foot upright and my leg was in a cast. And
God,
I thought, I can remember all of it. And I thought, well, my leg's going to be okay. They'll just fix it. That's what they do. And so while I was in A&E, I spoke to a doctor and he said, you know, there is a chance we'll have to amputate. And I was like, no, that's not going to happen, because I'm up talking to you. I can see my toes. I'm in a cast. No problem. And next thing I know, I woke up and no leg, no lower left leg. And it was the worst moment of my life. I remember looking down and just seeing half my leg and thinking, I was in such shock, I actually thought that they'd bent it underneath me.
It must feel so surreal at that moment.
Just, and no one was there, because unbeknown to me, they sent my friends home, my partner home, and said that, you know, theatre, you know, surgery won't be required for a few hours. But then it became a life-threatening injury, and they had to rush me straight in. And in order to save my life, they had to take my lower left leg. But, yeah, the worst moment of my life by far, waking up and realising that I had no lower left leg.
So, and were you totally conscious?
Absolutely. Like? Absolutely. I can remember it so clearly.
Yeah, that's the thing with me. I can't remember anything. So that's like the difference of kind of...
Also the trauma of... recollecting that and just remembering it constantly. But it does get better with time. And, you know, your life fills up with other things. So it gives you less time to ponder, which is always good.
How did you feel at the point when you had to, when you realised that you'd lost your leg? How did you actually feel?
If I'm perfectly honest, at that moment, I probably thought that... that's the end. And in a way, because I've relied on my body and my legs for as long as I can remember, as many people do, but being so physical, I just thought, what now? What's going to happen now? How do I move on? What can I do? Basically, I'm useless. It's like, you know, it was just the most awful feeling.
Yeah. That's such a massive thing for you to have to deal with and to go through that. It's huge.
Yeah. After that, I just sort of can't remember a lot until I went to the high dependency unit. They transferred me up to there for 4 days. And I just thought the more I learned about what they'd salvaged, like I've got my knee, it's lower leg, and saving my life, I just sort of turned around and thought, well, I should be grateful. I am grateful to all these amazing doctors who managed to do that, and my friend and the paramedics. And I thought, get on with it.
Yeah.
It's the only way. So when the physios came to see me on the second day and wanted me to transfer to a chair, I was like, brilliant, bring it on. And I was like, yep, great. And they were like, well, that was easy. And then I moved to the trauma ward 12D at the Royal London. And
is that where you were? So you're in the trauma ward?
I was in the trauma ward for 6 weeks, and all the staff there, everybody sort of pieced me back together emotionally and mentally. And then on the second day there, I saw a wheelchair and I thought, great. And then I was like, right, take me off the drugs, me off the morphine, get in there. And they were amazing, and I got in a wheelchair, and then I sort of, every morning I did circuits, a couple of hour circuits
around
the ward.
You're so strong anyway. I mean, for being so physical anyway, I think you're in the best place to trying to do stuff like that. It's a massive thing, sorry.
Yeah, it just, being physical, any form was just so good for me. And so I just sort of did a couple of hours whizzing around the ward, and they couldn't believe it. And then I was like picking up chairs and TheraBands, and like, what can I use to strengthen myself? What exercises can I do? And as soon as I went to the physio and got exercises, I would add those on top. So
you pushed the limits of it.
And then thankfully, the staff there pieced me back together, the emotional and mental side of it. They were just amazing. The whole trauma ward 12D and the doctors, I couldn't have been in better hands. So I was very lucky.
Now we've heard a little bit about Josie and how her life was before, what she could recall from the night that it all happened and all those first few days in hospital. I wanted to find out from Josie what it was like recovering from that accident and what rehabilitation was like for her.
The Royal London was just amazing. I couldn't have wished to be in a better place, in a worse situation. And then I moved to Lambeth Rehabilitation Centre, which is a specialist amputee centre. And the good thing was there was a gym all the time. So I'd do my circuits again in the morning, and then I would have OT, occupational therapy, physiotherapy. I also, on top of that, did acupuncture. I found that really helpful. Pilates. And then when
so the secret is to keep yourself fit, keep going,
keep going and busy. And then, of course, there were counsellors available once a week, and I just kept going to the gym.
Did you make some friends in rehab?
I did make a couple of friends. They were very different circumstances. I think people label you, if you're an amputee, you'll get on with this amputee, which is just the most ridiculous thing. So there were very different people there to me, obviously everyone's had their own story, blood clots, diabetes, lifestyle, but I did meet a couple of people who really, older people who really inspired me, and I thought, well, if they can get on their leg and get on with it, then I can. And then while I was in Lambeth, I got my first leg and wanted to go on it as much as possible. Unfortunately, I got blisters as well, so that slowed down. And the wound was so huge.
Yeah, so tell me about the wound.
Well, the wound took 6 months to heal. So I didn't really properly start walking and using it on a daily basis until August.
Let's talk about your getting your legs.
Yeah. So getting my first leg was just amazing. I just wanted to keep going. But unfortunately, the wound was still healing. So I only was allowed on it for a certain amount of time. And because you overdo it and then the wound starts bleeding and starts opening and sore. And then you just spend twice as much time. And I got my first leg, and I remember being, before that, at the trauma ward, I just wanted to get a leg and walk. And, they emphasised to me, no, the most important thing is the wound. The wound has to heal. So do my circuits in the morning.
How does it get to
air
heal?
Air dry for the day. So that was,
wow.
My doctor said, that's what you have to put your energy in. So I do my circuits and then air dry all day, because that was it.
And that's how they heal quicker.
That's how it
is
heals.
Is that how it happens? Because, massive to do that.
And then in Lambeth, so eventually I got walking again, and I was 6 weeks there, came home.
What hospital was it? Lambeth?
Lambeth Rehabilitation Centre.
Okay.
Specialist amputee.
Yeah.
So it was very lucky, because there's only 12 beds. So I was really lucky to go there. And then after 6 weeks, I went home, still in a wheelchair, on a second floor flat, which had its challenges.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And then still air drying the wound. But with the help of...
How long did it actually take to heal?
Heal totally, 6 months.
6 months, wow.
6 months. And then...
Do you have to worry about infection?
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest worries as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, infection on the wound.
Wow. And was there any pain through that?
I always have phantom pain, nerve pain. And due to the short end of the leg up past the knee, I have some pain as well related to the bones and the nerve. So there's always pain. You just sort of get used to it. On a daily level, it's probably about 3 or 4. And then when I'm on it all day or doing judo, then or teaching judo rather, not actually doing, then it can go up to off the scale. But you just manage it. I do everything I can to manage it. Visualization, mindfulness, acupuncture, massage, mirror imagery work. So everything I can, I do it. Yeah.
So phantom pain, just describe or explain what it actually is for someone who has.
Well, when I was in hospital and I had this pain in my foot that wasn't there, I kept, going, what is this? And they said, oh, it's phantom pain. I said, well, if it's in my brain, then I'll get rid of it. How do I do it? And I was adamant that this... And they were like, no. It comes from the brain, sending signals to the nerves, and they're not there.
Right, okay.
So you still get the pain because they think the leg's still there.
Mm.
In my case, the trauma was very sudden and I was very active. So they say I may never fully get rid of the nerve pain, phantom pain. And a doctor did come up and explain this all to me, that it comes from the brain, which I thought, okay, fair enough. It's not something I can just try and help relieve it.
Yeah, yeah.
But in a way, it is out of my control. But
yeah,
thinking the hard part is that for the brain, it has to realise that the leg's sort of there.
Yeah, okay.
So it will send the signal so they won't bounce back and go, whoa, what's happening here? But psychologically, the battle is, or has been and still is, to get used to the fact that there is no lower left leg.
Yeah.
So it's hard doing pushing the two together
yeah.
and trying to work with the two. But, you know, you just get on with it. It's everyday life. You just get on with it. You know, people are a lot worse off.
Now we've heard about the first few months of rehabilitation, including all those phantom pains. I wanted to find out from Josie what had been the most challenging parts of her recovery since the accident.
The most challenging is just the realisation. And also seeing your loved ones going through it as well and knowing that you can't turn back time, you can't change a thing.
Yeah.
And that has been so, so hard, so hard. I mean, my partner was, I couldn't have done it
yeah.
without her. Absolutely amazing. She did everything. Bringing me in food because I didn't particularly like the food and doing everything.
Don't think anyone liked the food.
No, exactly. That's the thing. I know. And sort of keeping a job and then coming home as well, living in a second floor flat.
I can't believe you've kept your job. That's amazing.
That was my aim. To go back to work.
And
in
how
September.
Long did it take you from that? How long? 2 years was it?
Well, I had the accident end of February. And I was determined to go back to school for the September term, brand new term,
yeah,
brand new academic year. And nobody really thought that I would, but that was my aim.
Well
and
done. My goodness.
I sort of busted a gut to just do it, and I did.
Well done.
It's been hard.
Pure determination, my goodness. Yeah.
It's been hard, and I've had to sort of cut down work because it is too hard and too painful, but...
Yeah.
I've still got a job that really is thanks to the support of the schools, the parents, the children, the staff, everybody at my schools and the, you know, cards and best wishes and emails, incredible. And that's what kept me going in hospital.
You've had massive support.
Massive, huge support.
Which is brilliant, yeah.
So when I went back to school, it was, you know, they did lots of fundraising as well, which was absolutely incredible. So kind and generous of them. Yeah. So going back to school, that was it. I mean, that was my life, teaching children judo. I love it. I absolutely love it.
I'm so pleased you're back.
I'm very lucky to be able to go back to work and do it. And yes, it's some days the pain is incredible, but I would rather be in that much pain doing what I love, because I know for shadow of a doubt that if I couldn't go in one day or I had to stay at home, then I would feel 10 times worse.
No, that's it. That's it. People have got to keep pushing on as well, haven't they?
You have to. There's only one way to go. And of course, I've had days and...
High days, low days. Exactly, yeah.
That you know, depression and awful, awful dark places that you go to and you're drawn to. And, you know, it's hard to get out. You know, it's like your head's barely above water. And your body's just scrambling so much to try and keep your head above water. And it is sometimes it feels like a constant thing. And then something will happen and it can just be a kind word from a stranger. And I know it sounds corny or cliche, but you have no idea. I think you have this that someone will say something nice and not like, oh, you're amazing or you're doing well, which is, it is wonderful
you're doing
to
well.
Hear. Yeah.
No.
But you think inside, you know, I'm pretty crap.
Yeah.
And
be honest,
I know people are, you know, they're being wonderful. But sometimes a total stranger, well, you know, you'll be sitting down, they don't even realise or they might, and they'll say something really kind and you just think, yeah. Or you'll see someone and meet someone who's worse off than you.
Yeah.
And you just think, come on, snap out.
That's the thing, isn't it? That is the thing. That's how you push forward and going forward. So have you suffered with PTSD?
I don't know if I've suffered from it because I don't know exactly. I haven't seen a counsellor specifically for that, but I do get flashbacks.
Yeah, you must have
flashbacks
from that
of
that
the
moment.
Accident and that night. And the moment I realised that my leg was gone, but that's That's the only thing. And it's not a constant.
Yeah.
Just, it's not a constant at all. So I wouldn't say it was PTSD.
Just vague kind of flashbacks.
Vague flashbacks.
I have very rarely have it.
Really?
But only like, probably had about five. But then you suddenly like, oh, it's just kind of, it's part of your brain kind of like reconnecting at that point. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's horrible. But then it's moved on to the next. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah,
that,
that's it.
That time
brief
and then you think
moment.
You can recognise it was there, but then we can move on. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the, from that point, it's pretty hard.
Yeah, I don't, it's for me, one of the hardest things is when you instantly wake up in the morning for a brief moment, just before I get out of bed, I think, hey, and then I realise, no. That's not going to be the same way. And that isn't constant, but it's just when
but that's
you wake
life
up,
now, isn't it?
That's life.
Life.
At least I've started to dream in some dreams as an amputee.
Oh, wow.
Which is quite an incredible step. I remember waking up one morning going, whoa, I had a dream that I was that I'm an amputee.
Yeah.
Which I think is really incredible.
I've only just had dreams again. I've only just had in the last couple of weeks dreams, and I'm now like, wow, so that's just a different part of your brain.
I mean, look at the progress of that.
I know, yeah,
that part of the brain is working again.
Yeah, I
you
know.
Must go to bed and go, come on, bring them on.
It's not nightmares, thankfully, because
bring
that would be
dreams.
Awful.
Yeah,
but that's
incredible.
Interesting. It's just a different part of the brain.
Different
that's
part
being
of
the
brain that's been reacting, but that's due to your hard work.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Of course it is.
It's quite random, isn't it? The whole thing, and then suddenly, like, now you're dreaming, and you're able to do that. So, that's brilliant.
It's so good to hear how Josie has managed to battle through her challenges and making it back to teaching judo. Now I want to know how Josie coped at home during the early days after the accident and how she managed to cope on a day-to-day basis. And getting to the park in her wheelchair, I began by asking Josie, what is the secret to her success?
I don't actually think there's been a secret. For me, it's easy because a secret to me, it's not a secret, but the way I've managed is just being totally down to the support I've had.
Mm, yeah.
Totally.
That's amazing, yeah.
And without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
My partner.
Yeah.
Just absolutely incredible. I certainly wouldn't be where I am now without the support of my friends, my family and my schools. That's it. Bottom line, no way.
Amazing.
No way. I wouldn't be here.
So tell me, at the time when this happened, you said you were living in a second floor flat.
I still am.
So tell me about how do you
so
manage
when
to deal
I,
with that?
When I got home, first of all, I wanted to do my wheelchair circuits, and luckily enough, I've got a fantastic park, Clissold Park, down the road.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So my partner every morning would take my wheelchair down to the ground floor.
Right.
And then I would go down on crutches or shuffle on the bottom, go down a couple of flights of stairs, open the door and ask any stranger passing by if they could take my wheelchair down to the street level.
Wow.
And sometimes I'd have to wait quite a while.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
And I'd be sitting there going, please, please, please. And then when they did, brilliant, I'd get in my chair, off I'd go.
There's a lot of people coming up and down that road, actually.
It is. But it's over the other side or listening to music and you're like, frantically. So they would take that down. I would get in it, go to the park, do my circuits. Obviously had a couple of falls out of the wheelchair.
Really?
Without a shadow of a doubt.
How was your first fall? What happened?
My first fall out of the chair was actually in hospital twice.
Oh, God.
One, a rookie mistake. Didn't put the brakes on. And secondly, another, actually, there were probably a couple. I was overdoing it. And and then came out, but I was all good. And going around the park, I fell out a couple of times.
You're pushing yourself very hard.
And I knew there was a little sort of bump in the pavement and I thought, oh, I'll take the corner.
Yeah.
And I didn't take the corner sly enough. I went over and fell over. And then another time I did sort of the same thing, but in a different place.
You on your own then?
I was, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So people come and help, and do you find people very
yeah,
helpful?
I was embarrassed, actually, so I just tried to get back in the chair as quickly as possible, dust myself off. And then very, very fortunate, the local corner shop, the Green Larder, they're amazing in there.
Yeah.
I'd finish my circuit, go into them, and then they'd come home with me, take my wheelchair upstairs, sort of supply me with shopping, anything I needed.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
Which they did when I was in hospital as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. It's an amazing
shop. Kindness
of
amazing, people. Isn't
amazing
it?
People.
Yeah. And kindness of people generally.
This is it. Yeah.
You been very
kindness
nice, yeah.
is just, yeah. Mm. And then they would get me upstairs and then I would prepare breakfast, which, and then I'd have a shower and prepare breakfast, which could, having a shower and getting ready could take up to about an hour.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because what I found in hospital was, as soon as I started to feel a bit better, it would be like, right, I would like some face cream.
Mm.
And some face wash, and it made me feel human again.
Yeah.
And always after my circuits in hospital, I would want to blow dry my hair and put products in, yeah. and you know, a little bit of jewellery, because it made me feel human.
Yeah, yeah.
And get out of that robe.
Yeah.
And it was just like, yes, real clothes,
yeah.
real clothes. And it just is amazing, that lift to mm-hmm. have real clothes. And so as soon as I could do that, it was amazing. And back home, it would be like same thing. And then air dry the wound.
Right.
Air dry the wound.
Mm.
And then that would be the afternoon. And sort of my partner, Tina, would come back from work early. She changed. Her work has been incredible and so supportive.
Yeah.
She changed her hours. So went in early, came home early. She'd prepare all my dinner, you know, plus doing other things like the washing and stuff, because I did try and do it a couple of times and then I just fell out the chair. I could do a couple of things,
yeah,
but didn't want to overdo it because certainly didn't want to fall on the limb.
So what sort of exercise routine are you doing now? Are you still pushing it? Are you still doing...
As much as I can.
Yeah. So... Which means for me, a normal sort of person doing it. So tell me, how many lengths do you do?
I go swimming Monday to Friday.
How long for?
About an hour.
Wow.
I do 50 to 60 lengths sort of front crawl. Then I do a few on my back. And I've always wanted to learn butterfly, try butterfly. And when I was able-bodied, I sort of went, no, that's too hard. I can't. And now, believe it or not, I'm like, right, I can see if I can do this with one leg or one and a half legs or one and three quarters. And then so I do a length, finish with, and it is my interpretation of butterfly.
Okay, yeah.
It probably looks like, you know, someone having a bit of a fit, but it's my interpretation.
Yeah.
So I do that Monday to Friday. And then when I'm working, I teach Monday afternoon, Tuesday and Wednesday. And I have probably 150 children, between 150 and 200, age range 5 to 13.
Wow.
And I still like to be very hands-on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I always demonstrate with the children.
Yeah.
They always, you know, throw me around if they can. And, you know, so I always hands-on. It's the only way to teach. And they've been brilliant.
I mean,
the first 5 minutes when I went back, it was like looking at the leg. And I went, right, let's get this over with. Bit like Chantel.
Yeah.
And now it's like, no big deal.
Brilliant.
And to the younger ones, it's like, oh, yeah, it's a bit of a bionic leg. They're like, cool. That is so cool. And they're like, you know, really observant. Have you got a new leg there, Joe? Have you got a new leg there, Josie? I'm like, yeah, would you like to see it? Yes. Okay. There have been mishaps where my leg has come off while I'm teaching. Horrific. But, you know, they're so resilient, children. It's like, can you go and get my spray to put it back on? No problems.
Yeah.
Just brilliant. So resilient.
Amazing.
And it's not a big deal to them. It's certainly not a big deal now.
Yeah. They're used to it now.
Totally. Very lucky.
Yeah.
And very interested in it. So I'm lucky.
Now how we've heard all about how Josie copes with being at home and getting to the park to do circuits in her wheelchair, and how the children who she teaches judo to take her artificial leg as normal, I wanted to find out what actually motivates her to keep pushing herself forward.
For me, it's to do justice to my amazing surgeons and my doctors and my nurses.
Right. Right.
And actually, everyone in hospital, you know, the domestic staff. I don't know.
It was a tricky wound, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A tricky wound.
But they became my friends, and they were my friends, and everybody in rehab, and my friends, and my family, and my partner. They're the motivation of my schools to move forward. The children, the parents, the staff. That's it.
That's
all the motivation I need is to not let them down.
Mm. And have there been highs and lows? Has there been highs?
Oh, incredible!
And lows? Yeah,
incredible. I mean, highs being able to walk on the leg all day, go back to work, and carry on working. Some. And the lows have been, there are days when I haven't been able to walk and I've had to cancel work, which is so hard.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing now. But sometimes, you know...
Got to listen to yourself, haven't you, as well.
And I've broken a couple of legs, so that doesn't help.
So how have you changed in the last 2 years for you?
Apart from the obvious, physically... mentally and emotionally, I've become more in tune with my body.
Mm.
And I really appreciated the simple things in life before the accident.
Mm.
But now, I mean, for me, this year, autumn was incredible.
Right.
And I don't know if that's because I appreciate and see it differently.
Yeah.
But it was. I have been so restricted with my social life.
Okay.
I used to really like going out, concerts, theatre, cinema, restaurants.
Yeah.
But you just can't do that now. You can't. You just try and do it all and then you end up going backwards and tired and just exhausted with everything. And then it puts you down on a downer.
Mm.
So you have to pick. I mean, yeah, lots of things have been cancelled, but I'm here.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I have got a life. So you just, it's the adaptation and the adjustment.
Did you think at the moment, did you think that there was a time when you weren't going to make it from when you got
absolutely
hit over?
But I only thought there was only one moment when I was lying on the pavement and my friends were there and the paramedics, and I just remember this pandemonium around me. And I was just like, I want to go home, or just let me sleep. Let me sleep.
Yeah, that's...
And I remember the paramedic, amazing, Sean, was pinching me. And I was just like, just let go of me, let me go home, or let me sleep.
God.
And then there was only one moment where I thought, ooh. And I remember seeing my dad, who died in 1987. I was incredibly close to.
Yeah.
And I remember trying to get to him. He was in the distance.
Did you?
And I remember trying to get to him. And he
it's really
held
interesting.
Held his hand up and just said, not yet.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know.
That's a near-death experience.
And then next thing I sort of realisation was I was in the ambulance.
Oh, wow,
But obviously, well, not obviously, but no, that was the only moment I thought,
he must have blacked out at that point or something and then seen those
very,
kind of...
And then I remember again sort of the craziness going on around me, thinking, what is going on?
Yeah.
Just let me be.
Finally, I wanted to know what advice Josie would give to someone else going through a similar life-changing situation to the one that she's been living through. And how does Josie actually feel about the future?
The only bit of advice was given to me by my amazing doctor, and he said, you know, one day at a time, one step at a time, or one push at a time, or one movement at a time, baby steps.
Baby steps all the way.
Baby steps. Don't look too far ahead because it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it can be really heavy on you.
Yeah.
So my best bit of advice would be just simply take it a day at a time.
Slowly take it.
Absolutely.
How do you see the future?
I can see it getting better. There will always be lows, but I think the future, no one can predict it. No one can predict the future. I mean, something else could happen. You can't
Absolutely.
Look too far ahead. But for me personally, I see it as a good thing.
Yeah. Positive.
I'm positive. I'm very positive about the future, extremely positive. I aim to do a lot more things I didn't do before.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think it's going to be good. Absolutely. And I'm realistic about it. Absolutely.
You've been listening to The Longest Battle here on RNIB Connect Radio with me, Emma Martins, and my guest, the amazing Josie Horton. To find out more about my own Longest Battle and to hear all the other podcast episodes, please visit my website, thelongestbattle.co.uk.